information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Appear to border
it shows.
On
the law.
You will listen and obey.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Just because you're paranoid don't mean they're not after you. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 229 from Media Monarchy. It's August 19th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, territorial pissings, kids for cash and flash robs, lone wolf, Googlerola and the NSA Blitz, space life, spank death, and pint-sized preachers, Pope protests suing Satan, green jobs, and Chuck D. Throne. Bombs, Bart, Paul, and the West Virginia miners, all that and so very, very much more here, August 19th, 2011, episode 229 from MediaMonarchy.com. When I was an alien, cultures weren't opinions. That is, of course, territorial pissings being covered by Surfer Blood. You can get that exclusive download. It's called Newer Mind. It's a spin-free download, and it's a track-by-track cover of new bands doing Nevermind. And I'm wearing my Surfer Blood shirt, and they are coming to town again very soon, but we'll get to all that. Ladies and gentlemen, it's August 19th, 2011, and this is episode 229 from Media Monarchy. Like I said, my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com and all the other sites within the growing kingdom. Your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. All that and so much very, very, very much more is here. And we are, as always, broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and simulcast worldwide with a huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com as well as RevereRadio.net. We record the show originally live and then we podcast it out. Thanks to Radio23.org, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org for all the hosting. And of course, thanks to TragedyAndHope.com for the support and for the community. FaceSpace, TwitterTube, and my Tumblr, I think, is broken. I haven't popped open the hood to see what the problem is, and it's not importing the new feeds, but it's just an extra redundancy of trying to spread out this open source, public domain, alternative media. We're also on Gmail and Skype and all those things with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. Your support helps keep Media Monarchy going and growing and going and growing. And a huge generous thanks to David in Rhode Island for his generous donation to Media Monarchy. As I see the P.O. Box bill yet again. So, the couple bits of business to mention and take care of. No show next week. I'm flying back to West by God, Virginia, to my hometown. Much needed R&R. And the other thing, while I was catching the bus to come to the Portland Radio Authority studios in Southeast Portland, Oregon, standing at the bus stop, and I see a dude and a dog kind of coming down the sidewalk, and it slowly, as he gets closer, it's like, oh, well, that's a cop. Oh, well, that's a dog. And my heart was a flutter because I had my pipe on me. And he goes by. So the bus comes, and then we roll around the corner, and I see that, oh, it's our good friends at Homeland Security. Holding it down in the Lloyd Center in Portland, Oregon, again, on this August 19th, 2011, just after 10 a.m. Pacific time. And what that also reminds me of, in not a good way, is today is 13 years ago, I went to court in Frederick, Maryland for possession of a controlled substance. I had some shake and a pipe coming back from the opening night of Sonic Youth's A Thousand Leaves tour at the 930 Club in Washington, D.C. And I had to go to court, and it was a very Clockwork Orange-like psychological operation on my brain 13 years ago. So there you go. As we glance at the breaking news, as we always do for you live here, as everything seems to be accelerating, we see a little bit of good news, I believe. The West Memphis 3 will be freed after 18 years. Arkansas judge accepts plea deal, frees the Memphis 3 9 minutes ago. We also have months of unrest led to U.S. call for Syria's Assad to resign. And so many other things that we will get to in this jam-packed episode 229 from MediaMonarchy.com. Like I said, it's August 19th, 2011. Let's do it. The long-awaited latest episode of New World Next Week has been published. NewWorldNextWeek.com. You get high-quality, low-quality versions of the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. He is back from his hiatus, timed right before I'm about to go on my own hiatus. But episode 81 is published. It will always originally live on YouTube.com/CorbettReport. Kids for Cash, Flash Robs, Lone Wolf 9/11. All of those stories we will get to, and we'll front load them here on the show. So on this episode of New World Next Week, we of course go into the text of these articles. So rather than rehash and reread things that are already put onto the record, and I implore you to go check out New World Next Week. I think one of the funnier comments was, God, the New World Order almost won while you guys were away, and that's very flattering. Kids for Cash judge only gets 28-year jail sentence. Judge Mark Chivarella, the personification of evil. As I said, we read the text of this story about the Pennsylvania judge. And we'll remind you here, we have more links providing you the story from Russia Today and from the Tribune Democrat and from even Wikipedia to read about Mark Chivarella and this Kids for Cash scheme destroying lives. So with these three stories that we front-loaded that we go over on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, rather than read the text, we're going to flesh it out with some audio and video if you hit the links, and you'll get the full picture of Kids for Cash.
Ma'am, my kid's not here! He's dead! Because of him! He ruined my f***ing life! I'd like him to go to hell!
That was Sandy Fonzo last February when Judge Mark Chivarella was found guilty of accepting nearly $1 million in exchange for sending kids away for minor offenses. One of them was her teenage son, who ended up taking his own life. Now the former judge has been sentenced to 28 years in prison for his role in what's being called the Cash for Kids scheme. Sandy Fonzo joins us now live. Sandy, welcome back to the program, and thank you again for joining us. What's your reaction to the 28-year sentence?
Well, now that it's sunk in, I'm very happy with it. It's, you know, justice in the sense that he is going to pay for, you know, what we've been dealing with for the last 8 years. So there is, we did get justice. I feel like I got some justice for my son. True justice, I don't think there could ever be. I mean, he'll never live the sentence that I live, that I'll live with for the rest of my life. Can't bring my son back.
Yeah. Have you spoken to any of the other families who were involved in this, any of the other parents? What's their reactions if you have spoken to them?
Well, I started a support group for a lot of us, and so we've been getting together a lot and talking. Just the Monday before the sentencing, we were all together. I had 100 of these T-shirts made with my son's picture on the front, and then all kinds of different, how much was your kid worth, different sayings on the back that they all wore together there with me on that day. Everybody was very, very pleased. We went in there, of course, with not a lot of hope. Expecting the worst, and so we were all very relieved, and I think we all slept pretty good that night.
Kids for Cash judge only gets 28-year sentence, and the one great comment at the bottom of my post, surely the appropriate sentence would be a summation of all those he fraudulently, I might add, handed out. So that's the first story on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com. And as a related bit of background info for you and something that we reference, and while it is not necessarily intimately connected with this case, it is connected on the grander scale. If you've never watched the suppressed documentary Conspiracy of Silence, it is linked up for you. It's the low-quality version, but it has the extra footage at the end of John DeCamp. We have seen so many stories lately of kidnapping, ritual abuse, child abuse, sex crimes. These stories only seem to bubble up more and more. And in a way, as we look at all these things in the alternative media, maybe all of these things, in a way, is the positive kind of purge that we're forcing these things to the fore. Everybody's finding out that the banking system is a complete sham. Everybody's finding out that the schooling system is a complete sham on purpose. Everyone's finding out that the military and the war for empire is a complete sham. Or a racket. So maybe this is the disclosure, if you will. The second story, and it took up the bulk of New World Next Week, from Flash Mob to Flash Rob, five things to know about crime waves, and we go through those points, and we read the entire text of this article from the IB Times. But again, multiple links added within these stories, hopefully to flesh out these stories to give you more text, subtext, context, such as military.com saying that flash mob attacks are the new terrorism. A flash mob in Germantown, Maryland, robbed a local 7-Eleven store in under 1 minute last Saturday night.
Just before 2 a.m. on Saturday, as many as three dozen young people entered this 7-Eleven store in Germantown. The store owner says they took numerous items off the shelves, then walked out without paying. It appears to be a flash mob, similar to ones taking place in Philadelphia. The owner of the 7-Eleven provided a copy of the video to News 4, but he didn't want the specific location of the store identified. We spoke to his son by phone.
Is this one of these flash mobs?
That's what it looks like from the video. You can see in the video that about 25 to 35 teenagers enter the store all at once. They grab everything they can grab and they run out of the store. It looks like it's pretty organized.
According to the store owner's son, Muhammad Jahansib, the clerk was helpless. Once he realized what was happening, he hit the panic button behind the register, which alerts police to a robbery. The clerk did not confront anyone who was taking items off the shelves.
It's shocking to see how they're not afraid of any repercussions from their actions. They're all smiling, they're laughing about it. They grab me, I'm being grabbed, and they just run right out of the store. Like they're not afraid of law enforcement.
Jahansib says Montgomery County Police did respond, but after the flash mob was gone. He says an officer looked at the video, but did not take a copy of it. He says the officer told him it would be hard to catch people based on these images. Jahansib says most of the people took candy, drinks, chips, and ice cream. Small ticket items, police say it would be considered shoplifting.
We're going to take this very seriously. The number of people involved in this clearly had a plan. This was an orchestrated event. And they were in control of that store for the minute or so they were in there taking items off the shelves.
As we see in so many cases that become the dominant memes in the media, and we don't want to try and play into any kind of glorification or amplification or echo chamber or disinfo, chatter, clutter, noise. But we want to cover the stories and try to expose them and explode them. So, yes, when stories get this large, it is always a pretty much organized operation. The city of Philadelphia has been experiencing some of the country's worst flash mobs over the past year, spurring Mayor Michael Nutter to institute a curfew for minors.
Take those doggone hoodie down, especially in the summer. Pull your pants up and buy a belt, because no one wants to see your underwear or the back of your butt. If you walk in somebody's office with your hair uncombed and the pick in the back and your shoes untied and your pants half down, tattoos up and down your arm, on your face, on your neck, and you wonder why somebody won't hire you, they don't hire you because you look like you're crazy.
That was Mayor Michael Nutter this Sunday passionately speaking to his congregation in the wake of teen mob violence. So this morning, take a look at this. We're looking at his plan. Starting this weekend, there was a 9 p.m. curfew for kids under the age of 18 at Center City, University City. 20 of the city's largest rec centers will stay open a little later until 10 p.m. through the summer. And parents, if your kid is picked up more than once, you can be fined up to $500 and even face criminal charges, maybe even jail time.
Now, the related updates posted below this story from Flash Mob to Flash Rob. We get to the piece that we only just referenced on New World Next Week. And let's slightly expand on it right here. From AmericanThinker.com, media stifling racial violence coverage. Race matters if we want to understand the current wave of racial mob violence. Flash mobs have a lot of people talking, no thanks to PC journalists who have refused all along to help us understand this emerging social problem. For those who care about language and the truth, Mary Schmitch of the Chicago Tribune has done a great service. She openly admits that her newspaper refuses to report the race of violent criminals responsible for an outbreak of racial mob violence in Chicago, which mirrors similar violence around the country. And there are links to her writing about that and to even a piece from the Chicago Tribune's editor, Gerald Kern. We do not reference race unless it is a fact central to telling the story. So I suppose that's the question we are posing and asking here. Is this central to telling the story? So, as we said, that article is from AmericanThinker.com and from News One. Philly mayor says flash mobbing teens damaging the race. Something he says in the expanded clip of what you just heard, a brief moment of him loudly. We did find, I believe it's a CNN piece, and it discusses the racial angle that I think we have to say here is not that. It's class warfare.
This summer, something that's been a harmless, even a fun fad has turned dangerous and illegal. Young people using social networks and text messaging to get organized have been assembling in what they call flash mobs. But over the weekend in Germantown, Maryland, a flash mob of more than 24 young people showed up at a convenience store just before 2 in the morning. Look at it right there, grabbing things off the shelves and out they go, leaving without paying. We're seeing similar reports in other cities, most involving African Americans and some leading to mob violence. With us now, the Montgomery County, Maryland Police Chief, J. Thomas Manger, and CNN contributor, Roland Martin. Chief, this is your jurisdiction, Germantown, where this played out. What do you know about how they got organized? And I've spoken to the Philadelphia Chief, Charles Ramsey, recently. He says they're using texting, using social media. Is that how this happened?
Well, that's still under investigation. We've gotten some information that some of these kids were at the Montgomery County Fair. When it closed, they took the last bus back to the transit center in Germantown. Then when they got there, what we're thinking is that's when they started using the social media to get a larger group together to go into the 7-Eleven.
All right, so you put this video online. You hope it helps you bust these thugs. On the other hand, do you worry at all it would glorify them? Because after an incident in Philadelphia, Google searches for flash mob peaked. And do you worry that other kids might say, oh, see, this is a way to get attention. This is a way to get on television.
Well, we're hopeful that the reaction we've gotten from the community quells that. I mean, we have gotten an overwhelming response from the community. In fact, because of the quality of that video, we've identified now over half the kids involved in this. And that's from folks who've seen the video and have called us with information.
Roland, when you see this, it's obviously abhorrent to watch the conduct like mm-hmm. this. There's other cases of beatings. The Philadelphia mayor, after an incident, a violent incident in his city, went into an African-American church, mm-hmm. and he delivered this lecture.
You damage yourself, you damage another person, you damage your peers, and quite honestly, you damage your own race.
Do you see it as an African-American problem, a youth problem?
No, I mean, I see it as a youth problem. And just like when I see after a basketball game or a football game, I'll see white kids on a college campus turning over police cars, setting them on fire. I don't say, oh, my God, what's happening with white college students? I see it as a college student issue. I think in this case, here you had Amir Nutter, African-American, speaking in a predominantly African-American church, speaking to the issue. In that case, you largely had African-Americans. And so he's making a very pointed issue. The problem here, and I do believe this is going to be the problem, that it becomes a copycat syndrome. Because even before Philadelphia, you had the problem in Chicago, where they were only on Michigan Avenue, and they had the problem there. And so I think when people all of a sudden see this, they say, hey, it's a great idea. But at the end of the day, parents, community leaders must say, whether they're black or white, these are thugs. This is criminal activity, and it is flat out wrong.
And Chief, some have suggested, and this has happened in London as well, you have the riots in London, you've had people there say, well, you know, you have high unemployment, you have an age of austerity where people are cutting government services. People have said here in America's cities, there's less money for summer jobs, fewer opportunities. You know, the police chief used to be here in D.C., Charles Ramsey, he's up in Philadelphia now. Here's what he said when I asked him, does the economy have something to do with this?
These are just ignorant kids that are out there doing things they have absolutely no business doing. Unemployment, education, these are not excuses to just go out and randomly target people and beat them up. There's just absolutely no excuse for it. It's just stupid. It's ignorant. And I just can't find any other words to describe it.
As a sidebar note, it's worth remembering that Ramsey, that you just heard there, is pretty much one of the main faces, I believe, of the D.C. sniper story. Maybe I'm confusing him now that I'm thinking of someone maybe named Moose. I digress. Let's tie in the other couple of related flash mob updates. Rapper The Game could face charges tied to flash mob calls. However, update, rapper gets away with flash mob. The rapper called The Game will not face criminal charges after a tweet from the rapper's account of over 500,000 people incited a telephone flash mob that jammed the emergency phone systems at one of the busiest stations of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. He said they could get an internship. BART police officers' addresses and emails posted in hacker's attack. We tie this in just to add in the extra element as we mention the London riots. And now we mention the BART protests. Perhaps a point we didn't make, although it's one that was not lost on us on New World Next Week, is that in the case of London and in the case of the BART in San Fran, they're both sparked by the cops killing someone. And then the story turns into, oh, there's a protest at the BART station because they turned off cell phone service. Why did they turn off cell phone service? Because people were there protesting the cops killing another guy. As we close out this post, which is the second story if you're keeping score on the latest New World Next Week, huge thanks to Glenn for sending this story, even sending the scans of the actual newspaper, the Metro, New York. NYPD riot units conduct drills. Disorder unit held mobilization exercise. In the wake of the London riots, the NYPD Disorder Control Unit held a mobilization exercise on Randall's Island last Friday, August 12th, to rehearse its response should out-of-control riots break out here. Approximately 180 police officers total from each borough's task force, including the horseback and aviation units, came out for the drill. The London response wasn't that great. They were outnumbered and taken by surprise, said Mike Codella, retired NYPD detective. When he was on the force, riot drills happen once a year at most, he said. The training exercise comes the same week the NYPD has stepped up its monitoring of social media used to organize mayhem across England and to coordinate teen mobs in Philadelphia. Police will now troll sites like Twitter and Facebook for suspicious activity, gang feuds, and house parties as part of a new juvenile justice unit. And again, that is on Metro.us out of New York. So referencing that, we do have a post on cyberspacewar.com. NYPD forms new social media unit to mine for mayhem. The NYPD has formed a new unit to track troublemakers who announce plans or brag about their crimes on Twitter, MySpace, and Facebook. Newly named Assistant Commissioner Kevin O'Connor, one of the department's online and gang gurus, has been put in charge of the new juvenile justice unit. He and his staff will mine social media looking for info about troublesome house parties, gang showdowns, and other potential mayhem, sources said, such as GMAnews.tv and PCMag.com. And we get this story from the always fantastic NationalTerrorAlert.com. So, setting up a new juvenile justice unit, if you'll stretch back and remember that story about the corrupt judge in Pennsylvania who was sentencing kids to juvie terms for kickbacks from the run-for-profit prison industrial complex. What could possibly go wrong? The third and final story on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Barry Satoro says the biggest terror threat on 9/11 is lone wolf.
I've covered the Middle East for a long time. I've covered terrorism for a long time. And I have to tell you, I'm worried that on the 10th anniversary, or approaching the 10th anniversary of 9/11, Al-Qaeda, or what's left of Al-Qaeda, or their supporters, will try to do something to seek revenge for your killing bin Laden. How worried should we be about that? How worried are you about that?
Well, look, we are vigilant and constantly monitoring potential risks of terrorist attacks. And I think that the men and women in our intelligence agencies, as well as the FBI, have done a terrific job, and Department of Homeland Security. But the risk is always there. And obviously, on a seminal event like the 10th anniversary of 9/11, that makes us more concerned. It means we've got heightened awareness. The biggest concern we have right now is not the launching of a major terrorist operation, although that risk is always there. The risk that we're especially concerned of right now is the lone wolf terrorist, somebody with a single weapon being able to carry out wide-scale massacres of the sort that we saw in Norway recently. You know, when you've got one person who is deranged or driven by a hateful ideology, they can do a lot of damage, and it's a lot harder to trace those lone wolf operators. So we're spending a lot of time monitoring and gathering information. I think that we generally have to stay vigilant. There may be a little extra vigilance during 9/11. On the other hand, keep in mind the extraordinary progress we've made over the last couple of years in degrading Al-Qaeda's capabilities. They are a much weaker organization with much less capability than they had just 2 or 3 years ago.
So what I hear you saying is we don't have to worry about a spectacular 9/11 kind of event, more like a lone wolf can do some damage, right, kill a lot of people, but not a nuclear or radiological or anything like that?
Look, as President of the United States, I worry about all of it. But I think the most likely scenario that we have to guard against right now ends up being more of a lone wolf operation than a large, well-coordinated terrorist attack. We still have to stay on top of it, though, and we're never letting our guard down. That's part of our job.
I wish your job was a little more vigilantcitizen.com and less whatever you are. This all comes on the heels, of course, of the most recent lone gunman event, and we do have some updates on that. You know, the one that happened on 7/22, where 77 were killed. Let's get our related 9/11 updates. None of these things we go over on New World Next Week, and again, latest episode is available. As you can tell, I'm excited about it. I'd like you to check it out and spread the word about it. Our related 9/11 updates. 9/11 first responders to be excluded from 10th anniversary ceremony due to security and space concerns. Mayor Bloomberg says the event is finalized. More on that from the Wall Street Journal and Fox News, and yet another example of how we treat people we claim to hail as heroes, such as John Feel, F-E-A-L, of the Feel Good Foundation, with this rather strange headline from Yahoo. First responder fights back after losing foot to 9/11 accident. BBC to take another shot at 9/11 truth. Of course, all the anniversary shows, all the mainstream, all the official story rebuffing, they have to keep telling their lies over and over and over and over and over again to kind of catapult the propaganda. BBC to take another shot at 9/11 truth, and we'll see National Geographic and CBS and all the others. An interesting one from InfoWars, from Kurt Nimmo, points out something during an NPR interview with New York Times veteran reporter Tom Shanker, who co-authored the book Counterstrike, The Untold Story of America's Secret Campaign Against Al-Qaeda. And we learn that the Pentagon routinely pretends to be Al-Qaeda and goes into forging the watermarks on official Al-Qaeda postings, just as we've all been talking about for years, with the shady connections of SITE, Intelligence Service. It's all intelligence connected, CIA, Mossad, MI6, and more. So that interview, and where he discloses that, is in the middle of an entire episode of Fresh Air from NPR, your favorite foundation-funded fake progressive media. But they still do good work from time to time, and we'll pick through, and we'll sort, and I'll give it to you. It's in the interview's in the middle of this 45-minute podcast that you can download. So, needless to say, I did not extract the clip. Richard Clark's going too easy on George Tenet, as we discussed last week in one of the interviews. That's coming out as part of the anniversary blitz of the controlled corporate media. Richard Clark suggests that Tenet and others block the sharing of info with the government, that basically they wanted to let the hijackers in with the hopes that, oh, we can ensnare them into making them double agents. That's crazy. Our last related 9/11 update is a little bit of sliding doors synchronicity. Of all the days to be late for work, this was the one. Laura Lundstrom Clark was a 24-year-old financial services professional who worked on the 77th floor of Tower 2 at the World Trade Center. And on 9/11, Clark couldn't get to the office on time thanks to a chance encounter with Gwyneth Paltrow. And it basically goes through this thing that she's rollerblading and she almost gets hit by a car, and they do the kind of standoff of who's going first, and she realizes it's Gwyneth Paltrow, and oh my God, that's amazing. She misses the train, so she doesn't make it to work on time. So the story all making the rounds is that Gwyneth Paltrow saved a woman's life on 9/11. The fascinating synchro-mysticism tie-in to this: when Clark rushed downstairs to catch her train, the doors had slammed shut, hurtling downtown out of the station. The scene mirrored Gwyneth Paltrow's film from 1998 called Sliding Doors, in which a missed subway train dramatically changes her character's life. And we include that trailer for you to check out. I believe I was working at a little one-screen art house theater, the Opera House in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. We played that, and we would play a lot of the Miramax stuff that ultimately wasn't very good. But because it got stamped Miramax, you go, oh, well, this is going to be great. My friends, that's all the related minutiae surrounding those big three main stories of the Kids for Cash, Flash Mob, Flash Rob, and Lone Wolf 9/11. Let's move to some of our other favorite friends in the alternative media, such as PeaceRevolution.org. Episode 37 has been published, Justified Sinners, The History of Eugenics in America. Getting into the Bilderberg Group, Black Genocide, Margaret Sanger, the Eugenics Record Office, Charles Darwin, Francis Galton, and of course John Holdren and Paul Ehrlich, Eco-Science Population Bomb. All that and so very much more. And at the top of this posting, we want to remind you, I don't believe we've mentioned it here, but the donate buttons are there to get The Ultimate History Lesson, A Weekend with John Taylor Gatto, the multi-DVD interview project currently in post-production. Over 5 hours of interview footage, collection of education is invaluable. John Taylor Gatto, of course, New York State Teacher of the Year, who realized it's all a scam and is essentially another whistleblower from the aforementioned crumbling on purpose school system. So again, huge thanks to PeaceRevolution.org and the entire community of TragedyAndHope.com. Our good friend Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org is live every weeknight, 9 to midnight on KXL 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon. I believe he's number one in the time slot, which goes to show, radio, if you put something interesting on the air, people will listen to it. Instead of the same old classic rock market research crap. We always post up Clyde's articles and episodes. The Garden, Aurora, Cosmic Ectoparasites, getting into Morgellons, and much more. And I pointed out in the chat room, I was catching that show live Tuesday night, and Clyde read my comment live on the air, noting that the DVD extras on the film The Invasion, the 2007 Nicole Kidman, Daniel Craig version of the Invasion of the Body Snatchers series, In the DVD extras, one of the little documentary featurette bits talks about Morgellons and more. EBE, Mona Lisa, Apollo 20, Childhood's Conundrum, Looking Inside the Black Box, all that and so much more from groundzeromedia.org. And again, like all of the folks who, as I say, we're proud enough to be associated with in the alternative media, please support them. Let's now move to one of the sites in the kingdom, cyberspacewar.com. Weather report, Project Bluebeam in the air? Or, as Paul Joseph Watson puts it, pay your carbon taxes or space aliens will attack. But my man, Alan, in Omaha, helps us out on Holy Hexes and CyberspaceWar.com notes. A blacklisted news article reports on recent alien invasion references by controlled corporate media mouthpieces like Michio Kaku and Paul Krugman. Kaku repeats the Ronald Reagan platitude that all the world would forget their local differences under a common threat from an alien species. Krugman throws in crackpot oligarch view that an alien invasion would bring us out of our current greatest depression. The article on blacklistnews.com references to NASA's Project Bluebeam and Serge Monast, M-O-N-A-S-T, possibly did more than anyone to warn of this threat to bring about a new world order. And he died under suspicious circumstances. But you can read about him on Wikipedia. A hoaxed alien invasion through the use of holographic images seems more real now than ever. There's a mirage in China that we post up with this article. Monast believed UFO sightings were projected images, and he spelled out how this takeover would occur in the steps. Mind control is an important step achieved through VLF-ELF frequencies saturating the Earth from satellites. Dr. Carol Rosen revealed when working with space engineer Wernher von Braun how the agenda would be fulfilled, weaponization of space, through an enemies list. First it would be communists, then it would be terrorists, then it would be nations of concern, then it would be asteroids, then it would be aliens. The list would fuel budgets to get more equipment, i.e. weapons, into space. Dr. Rosen emphasizes the extent to which von Braun was apparently preoccupied with this agenda. Is this a sci-fi psychological operation? And this became the talking point. And we, again, provide links in this story for you to read more about Wernher von Braun, this hoaxed alien invasion. And again, huge thanks to all the listeners who get in touch and send me news tips and thoughts and criticisms and constructive, amazing connections. And I appreciate every single bit of it. MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. And I can't remember off the top of my head when I reference some of the bits that I get from folks. I wish I could say, hey, this is from dude. But from someone, they reference, of course, the Watchmen film and what they changed. Everything was faithful because, of course, everybody always said the Alan Moore graphic novel was unfilmable and it took forever and it finally came out. But they changed the ending, and the ending was a fake alien invasion to unite humanity into a one-world system. Is it possible they don't want to put that idea out again, quite so possibly close to the point where they're trying to herd us into that pin? So, there is research to back this up. And we give you the link to the PDF where you can read the 33-page document, Would Contact with Extraterrestrials Benefit or Harm Humanity? A Scenario Analysis. The Weaponization of Space. Bear that in mind as we continue on through CyberspaceWar.com. DARPA hypersonic plane crashes 9 minutes into flight. A Minotaur 4 rocket placed the DARPA Hypersonic Test Vehicle 2, HTV-2, in proper trajectory, but the plane, capable of Mach 20, that would be 13,000 miles per hour, couldn't be controlled, and it plummeted to Earth into the Pacific Ocean. And we have more reports from The Independent. And for clips for you to watch on YouTube. The cost of the vehicle is estimated on the net anywhere from $240 to $320 million, and you thought your gas was expensive. However, as we just noted, on the weaponization of space through the communist scare, the terrorist scare, the other nation scare, the meteor scare, and then ultimately the fake alien slash war of the worlds slash rapture psyop. It's getting to the weaponization of space. So, ultimately, this crash, expensive as it may have been from the fine folks at DARPA, it's not really a disappointment because this vehicle was intended to provide a quick global strike capability.
The U.S. military has lost contact with the fastest aircraft ever built during a test flight. The Falcon glider is designed to go so fast that it can get from London to Sydney in under an hour. But the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency lost communication with it just 36 minutes into Thursday's flight. The Falcon was launched from Florida into space inside a rocket-propelled vehicle. On reaching suborbital space, the Falcon popped out of the rocket and began its flight back into the upper reaches of the Earth's atmosphere. The glider was expected to reach Mach 20, that's about 21,000 kilometers per hour during its glide phase. It was to perform a series of test maneuvers in order to assess its performance before making a controlled descent and ditching into the Pacific Ocean. Earlier, I spoke to Philip Ewing. He's a reporter for military.com and an editor of DoD Buzz, a U.S. Defense Online journal. I asked him for more details on what happened to the aircraft.
DARPA announced today that it had conducted this test as planned. The vehicle had gotten away from the rocket ship that you mentioned a moment ago, and then we don't know what happened. We presume the vehicle splashed down in the Pacific, or crashed in the Pacific more likely, as it was programmed to do if it lost contact with controllers. But beyond that, we don't have many details at this point.
Now, if we look at this project, what's the purpose behind it? Why is the Air Force or the Pentagon so keen to put something into low orbit up there?
Well, the context here is that the Pentagon for the past decade or so has wanted something it calls prompt global strike. It wants the ability to strike a target anywhere in the world in about an hour's notice. So it needs a new, very fast, advanced weapon, probably one that involves space or high speeds and high altitudes like this, to be able to get there. And the process going forward is, how do you build a weapon, or how do you build a plane or a spacecraft that can do this mission? And that's where we are with this experiment today.
So how big a setback is this? Because this is not the first time one of these aircraft or one of these gliders have crashed. This is the second time, isn't it?
That's right. And that's an excellent question. And we'll know more going forward as DARPA and the Air Force and the Pentagon talk about this. What they might say is that you have to fail to succeed when you're developing a new weapon, especially something as new and advanced as this. So it's possible they could have learned some good lessons from the test today that they can use if they decide to go forward. But at this point, we don't really know.
So what would they be looking at? What's the next step for them?
Well, what they need to be able to do going forward is test with a real vehicle how something traveling this fast at this altitude actually behaves. You can model it with computers and with wind tunnels to a certain degree, but what the Air Force really wants and what DARPA really wants is to put something actually up that high and have it fly this fast at Mach 20 and just see how it behaves. How can it turn? How can it maneuver? And that'll inform programs like this and others in the future.
So, failing forward, my friends, from the register and staying on top of DARPA, DARPA shells out $21 million for IBM Cat Brain Chip. The U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, is moving ahead with the final solutions company, International Business Machines, IBM, in the third leg of its Synapse Cat Brain Chip. That leaves one more leg, a tail, and nine lives to go. But because this is the military, the third leg of the Systems of Neuromorphic Adaptive Plastic Scalable Electronics, Synapse, project at DARPA is called Phase 2. And IBM's techies have already completed Phases 0 and 1. The initial phase of the project simulated the cortex of a cat brain on an IBM Blue Gene massively parallel supercomputer with 147,000+ cores and 144 terabytes of memory, and developing the basic synaptic circuits for the brain chip. Our last note on DARPA, I think, From allgov.com, Pentagon's Inspector General finally investigating DARPA Chief Regina Dugan's contract conflicts. And somewhere back in the Media Monarchy archives, we covered when the already noted conflict of interest bearing Regina Dugan became the head of DARPA. It's back there in the archives. Moving forward from DSLReports.com, Google to buy Motorola for $12.5 billion, creating what I believe I have coined as Googlerola.
In a move that has the potential to dramatically change the smartphone market, Google, the search giant and creator of the Android operating system, has announced it is acquiring Motorola Mobility for a cool $12.5 billion in cash. That represents a 61% premium over the closing market price on Friday. Google is luckily purchasing the 80-year-old Motorola in part for its patent portfolio, as Android has been embroiled in patent litigation lately. Though we're not sure how, Google says it is committed to Android being an open platform. This, however, may force Microsoft to acquire Nokia or Research in Motion now that Google will be able to closely integrate software and hardware design. In short, this is a big deal.
I don't know if I came up with that or not. There are definitely other places that is online. So yet another consolidation. And you can get more on that story from Google's own blog. CEO promises to supercharge Android ecosystem. Watch that word ecosystem popping up more and more and more as we create the trusted traveler identity ecosystem online. Buzz Aldrin finds the sparkle gone from his space odyssey. The buzz is gone as space-age hero's life spins out of control. From the Telegraph, over four decades after he became one of the first men on the moon, astronaut Buzz Aldrin is experiencing the dark side. More on the tale of woes and divorce and more of Buzz Aldrin from the Daily Mail and the Sydney Morning Herald. Wrapping up quickly all our other related things on cyberspacewar.com. Area 51 declassified U2 and Oxcart programs, getting into Lockheed Skunk Works, Groom Lake, the Nevada test site, and more documentaries that you can watch on YouTube. From National Geographic, Area 51, declassified. Martian moon Phobos, discovered August 17, 1877, posted on its anniversary. Astronomer Asaph Hall discovered a dim star while observing Mars through a 26-inch refractor telescope at the U.S. Naval Observatory, the largest telescope at that time. Amazing photos to go along and more to read on Universe Today. A new theory of everything, phase space, getting into and asking the question of phase space, momentum space, curious eight-dimensional world that merges our familiar four dimensions of space and time, and a four-dimensional world called momentum space. More from NewScientist.com. A four-minute movie called Black Rain, produced by Semiconductor Films from raw data of NASA STEREO, that's Solar Terrestrial Relations Observatory, and their mission's heliographic images. It's kind of awesome, and Alan compares it to something like the same style as 2001. The Perseid meteor shower, you can check it out. The pictures, and we post up an amazing one along over top Stonehenge. Finally, on cyberspacewar.com, we reach the 818 DEFCON. That's the News Purge list of headlines featuring sabotage, lawsuits, and space life. From, again, the Register, Scotland Yard 4 cleared on phone hacking, and Glenn Mulcair, the private investigator that seemed to be at the heart of phone hacking, is now suing the News of the Week, News of the World, rather, publisher. More on that from The Guardian. And from federalnewsradio.com, cyber recruits key part of the National Security Agency's hiring blitz.
We have partnerships with a number of universities. We have a Center of Academic Excellence program, which you can see on NSA.gov. We are working with professors to try to establish good relationships. We need the best and brightest. And we also need to emphasize it's not just government that needs these people. Industry, academia, this is a partnership. And we need to develop the talent in this country to protect us against what's going on. And there's a lot going on. But by reaching out to students while they're in college, even while they're in high school, even while they're in middle school, to let them know that there is exciting work to be done, that there are great careers in this field. We want them to think about not being rocket scientists, but being cyber warriors, because that's what the country needs right now.
That's what the country needs right now. Verizon strike, and now the FBI is probing acts of alleged sabotage by its own workers. Could this be yet another sign of the times and the shape of things to come? The brutal update makes it all the more certain. From StratRisks.com, meet Verizon's newest security force, that's right, Blackwater. Or Z. It doesn't matter. It's private military industrial complex killers. Apple sued by 27,000 South Koreans over LocationGate. That would be, of course, your iPod and iPhone tracking and tracing everywhere you go all the time. Oh my God, I can't believe that. States study online gambling to bring needed revenue. I saw this story on the break. Reading the newspaper, reading the New York Times at work. This is back on the 14th. States study online gambling to bring needed revenue. This immediately reminded me of the flashback, and you can go through the few posts getting into the DHS and ICE recent pirate domain seizures. And I looked for where it may have been said in any of the related articles and in those posts. I couldn't find it, but I know we said it on the show when we were covering those stories, and we'll say it again, and we essentially called it. They're shutting down all the illegal pirate sites so that they can run the gambling. That's how gangsters work. Last couple notes on this 818 DEF CON on cyberspacewar.com. NASA opens Deep Space Missions Office for manned spaceflight. More on that from Hulick. And from, again, the Register, NASA says Comet Elenin will definitely not hit Earth. But the final note on this DEF CON is kind of an amazing one, and it's yet another example of so many times that, unfortunately, just due to the format and the time constraints, we bury the lead. DNA building blocks found in space.
NASA researchers have found the building blocks for life on Earth in meteorites, indicating that the components for life on Earth may have originated in outer space. According to the findings from a group of NASA-funded researchers, the scientists found that ready-made DNA parts could have crashed to Earth's surface on objects like meteorites and then assembled under Earth's early conditions to create the first DNA. The researchers made their discovery using samples from 12 carbon-rich meteorites, 9 of which were from Antarctica. Then the team extracted small fragments of the meteorite and ran them through a process to determine their structure. What they found was adenine and guanine. These are two of the nucleobases needed to make DNA that form the rungs of the ladder. The lead researcher of the discovery said people have been discovering components of DNA in meteorites since the 1960s, but researchers were unsure whether they were really created in space or if instead they came from contamination by terrestrial life. The team all but ruled out the possibility that the components were contaminated on Earth because the nucleobases they found do not naturally occur on this planet. The research has even greater implications than first meets the eye. If the ingredients for life were brought here from some external source, there's always the possibility that the same thing has happened elsewhere in the universe, possibly many times over. This would give credence to the theory that life exists on other planets. The research was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
My name is Mike Callahan. I'm a research physical scientist in the Astrobiology Analytical Laboratory at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. We've discovered a variety of nucleobases and nuclease analogs in meteorites. And what a nuclease is it's a small molecule that's found in DNA and RNA, and these molecules are essential for all of life. So results show that these molecules are extraterrestrial in origin and the products of a chemical reaction occurring in the meteorite. We believe that these nucleobases and meteorites are extraterrestrial based on three reasons. And the first is that we find nucleobase analogs in meteorites. What a nucleobase analog is that it is a molecule that is structurally similar to the nucleobases you find in biology, but it's different, and that these structures are actually either rare or even absent on Earth. The second reason is that in addition to looking at meteorite samples, we also study terrestrial samples. So these meteorites are collected mostly in Antarctica, and one that's very famous called Murchison was collected in Australia. So we have soil samples from that Murchison area in Australia, and we've also had, we were lucky enough to get an ice sample from Antarctica where some of these meteorites were collected. And so when we look at these soil and ice samples in the laboratory, we don't see the same distribution of nucleobases. And with these nucleobase analogs, we don't see them at all in these terrestrial samples. The third reason why we think these nucleobases are extraterrestrial in meteorites is that in the laboratory, we study reactions of hydrogen cyanide. And when we extract these the products from these hydrogen cyanide reactions, we also get nucleobases. And we actually get a similar suite of nucleobases to what's found in the meteorite. And so when we saw that, we were really excited because we were thinking, well, hydrogen cyanide is dispersed everywhere in the interstellar medium, and it's likely to have some sort of chemical reaction on the meteorite. And so when we saw that, that really convinced us a lot that we're seeing something from a chemical reaction rather than some sort of biological contamination coming into the meteorite. So this has implications for the origin of life on Earth. We know that meteorites contain amino acids, which are the building blocks of your proteins. And now from our research, we can show that nucleobases, which are the building blocks of your genetic material, like DNA and RNA, are also found in meteorites. And so these things together could have seeded an early Earth with these really important molecules that could have built up to the larger molecules you see today that are essential for biology.
It's all really seeming to come out on some level, and it's all coming together quite nicely, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, we're into hour number two of episode 229 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 19th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, ZeroPointRadio.com, and RevereRadio.net. We'll shift gears now over to one of the other sites, another site in the kingdom, holyhexes.com, and we'll begin with the pop culture news purge for August 18th, mega church death, collapse, and pint-sized preachers. But first, Florida pastor found dead in New York hotel. Megachurch pastor Zachary Timms, dead in Times Square hotel, allegedly had drugs. White powder was found in a baggie in his pocket. And we post up the one good photo we could find of him is the cover of his book, It's Never Too Late. And as this will start to get much, much more gruesome in a way, unfortunately, as we chronicle these things going on. Fundamentalist Christians use the rod and kill the child in the name of God.
Parents who beat their child to death in the name of God. They believe the Bible requires them to spank their kids with items like belts and rods in order to train them to be well-behaved, happy kids. These parents appear to have been following the teachings of a Christian parenting book called To Train Up a Child, the book that is growing in popularity around the world. Gary Tuckman tonight has the first of our two-part special report.
The small town of Paradise, California, where these children lived with their parents in a fundamentalist Christian home. For the nine children, life in paradise was anything but. We cover up eight of their faces because they are the survivors. Survivors of a violent form of discipline practiced by their parents, Kevin and Elizabeth Schatz. The one face not covered is their 7-year-old adopted daughter, Lydia. She was killed by her parents. Mike Ramsey is the district attorney of Butte County in Northern California.
We've heard of, you know, the phrase death by a thousand lashes. That's basically what this was.
This is where the family used to live. The children's sandbox is still here. So is their slide and their treehouse. But the surviving children are now in foster homes, and the parents are in prison.
Violated Section 273A, parentheses B.
They pleaded guilty to killing Lydia and seriously injuring her 11-year-old sister, Zariah, who almost died. Authorities say Kevin and Elizabeth Schatz beat their children regularly because they believe God wanted them to. The district attorney says the Schatz believed
to spare the rod will spoil the child. And if you can train your horse and you can train your dog, you can train your children.
7-year-old Lydia suffered terribly, supposedly in the name of God. But authorities say this was torture and murder by parents who were supposed to love and cherish their child. Inside this house, they found important evidence, the so-called biblical rod that the Schatz had inside. What they were 15-inch long plumbing supply tubes used to beat the children. And also important, a book was found inside, a book that appeared to light the fuse to the deadly brutality.
And I suppose this would be another rung up the ladder of atrocities, worse than the faith healing stories we've discussed on Holy Hexes. Continuing the pop culture news purge, Moses' journey is now a Facebook game. More on that from Belief Blog. Death cult worship of skeletal saint grows among Mexican drug gangs. More on that from Latino.FoxNews.com. Jennifer Lopez and Mark Anthony split over Scientology. She's down with it. He, not so much. Let's see what happens to Mark Anthony. Virginia bans Sherlock Holmes book for being derogatory to Mormons.
The classic Sherlock Holmes novel disrespects Mormons. That's why the book is now off the school district's reading list. Andrew Adams has the story.
The school district centered around Charlottesville, Virginia, decided to take A Study in Scarlet off the sixth grade reading list because a parent complained. That decision is reigniting a debate over censorship and bigotry, even here in Salt Lake City.
Nothing could ever induce him to allow his daughter to wed a Mormon.
At Sam Weller's bookstore, Tony Weller revels in history and writing, even if it proves to be controversial. A Study in Scarlet is apparently full of both.
Such a marriage he regarded as no marriage at all, but as a shame and a disgrace.
A parent didn't like the references to Mormons and Mormon life. She characterized A Study in Scarlet to the Albemarle School Board as the first inaccurate introduction to an American religion. The board pulled it.
It's very hard to get an accurate opinion about history.
Weller is panning the move, even though he knows the famed author himself later apologized for some of the writing. He can't justify the censorship.
There were many other books written that said terrible things about the Mormons, but if they're not well known, they're not well read, and they're not going to come to our attention.
Brooke Young has thumbed through her share of Sherlock Holmes books at the Salt Lake City Library and feels the same way. The book, she says, could be a learning opportunity in many ways.
Books and fiction in particular are really great and essential way that kids can explore really controversial and dangerous topics in a safe and structured way.
Others, however, are supporting the school board's move. They question the reading level and question whether past bigotry should be retaught.
Books should stay in the library, absolutely. Should not be banned, no. But if you're just looking at curriculum, what's appropriate for sixth grader in curriculum? I think that's what school boards are for, and I think they made a good decision here.
As for what replaces A Study in Scarlet, the school board is considering Hound of the Baskervilles, another Sherlock Holmes classic.
Christian Music Festival may have sung its last tune. The Ichthys Festival in Wilmore, Kentucky just finished its 42nd year, but they are pretty much out of money and there will probably not be a 43rd year, mostly, I believe, due to the fact that they're in Wilmore, Kentucky. Prayer Circle credited with saving the band Sugarland during Indiana stage collapse. That's from GodDiscussion.com, and we will touch again on that story and the seeming copycat wave of events that follow in just a little while. But we close off this 818 Pop Culture News Purge megachurch death collapse with the documentary Shining a Light, and many would say an ugly Jesus camp hell house type of light on pint-sized preachers.
Children who preach the gospel have long been part of the Christian evangelist movement. Today, the power of video sharing sites has spread the message of these young preachers around the world.
A word after
In Mississippi, Canon Tipton is 4 years old.
It's
Known across YouTube as the world's youngest preacher, millions of people have seen his fiery sermons.
Lord, set them free.
In Rio de Janeiro, Mateus Moraes has been evangelizing since he was 6 years old. Now 12, he continues to tour Brazil, attempting to convert thieves, drug dealers, and gang members. In Florida, Terry Durham claims to be the world's youngest ordained minister. Many believe he can heal the sick with a single touch. Are these children a force for good in the spiritual battle against evil? Or the result of fanatical parents and congregations desperate for a miracle?
You battled for the cause!
As we continue to paint a vulgar picture for you on holyhexes.com and again see how it is all somehow synchromistically connected. DSM-5 to normalize pedophilia in 2013. Author and researcher Judith Reisman warns of the lobby to normalize pedophilia. In a new American article by Dave Bohan, he reports the pedophilia lobby has set its sights on upcoming revisions to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5, or the fifth revision, to be published in 2013. Reisman sees the trend, quote, will continue to spiral down into, well, we'd have to say, the abyss of hell, unless we retrieve our laws, our mass media, and our schools. The proposed revisions are reminiscent of those in the DSM-4 in 1980, with homosexuality deemed no longer a mental disorder. Are pedophiles too emotionally immature to relate to adults, or are they possessed of a control freak personality and children the perfect subject? It's a sad day when it's entertained that a minor could enter into such a relationship as if they're the age of consent or sufficient maturity to realize what they're getting into. Corey Feldman should be applauded for coming out with his allegations, as we reported for you last week. Pedophilia was, is, and will always be the number one problem in Hollywood, as we connect the church and the media. That article is, again, from our man Alan in Omaha. Continuing on holyhexes.com, Joey Ratz, that's right, the former Hitler Youth, Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict, and his visit to Spain has, of course, triggered violent protests in Madrid.
Riot police in Madrid clash with demonstrators protesting the cost of the Pope's visit to Spain this week. Thousands of people of all ages took to the streets under the slogan, "Nothing for the Pope from my taxes." The initially peaceful protest turned violent when police tried to clear the central Puerta del Sol plaza. The Pope was due to arrive on Thursday as part of the World Youth Week celebrations. Madrid residents are divided over the protests, with one saying they portray a shameful image.
If they did other things, they would be entertained with that, or maybe subconsciously it's envy because they don't have that spirituality. In any case, the image they portray is shameful, but we will survive.
Another blames the police for allowing demonstrators and pilgrims to meet in the same square.
I think it's wrong because they knew there would be violence, because if you let something anti and something pro get together, in the end something will break. That's a basic. They should have had a demo one day and the other thing another day.
Hundreds of thousands of young people will attend the Roman Catholic Youth Festival in Madrid this week, including pilgrims from all over the world. Critics say Pope Benedict's four-day visit will cost around 100 million euros, though the government will not give a figure. This comes at a time of severe economic hardship in Spain. Nick Rowland, Reuters.
And you can already see the photos of the kids amassing for World Youth Day, kissing the Pope's hand. Again, as we're painting a vulgar picture for you, and I hope you see the dots connecting. I wonder, it's like, don't you kids have a computer? Have you not looked anything up about the hand and the ring you're kissing? And that they're using your money to do the visit as if, oh, the Catholic Church, we need your donations. Report shows rise in world restrictions on religion. This from Faith World and Reuters. And the links go to the Pew Research Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life. Nearly a third of the world's population lives in countries where it is becoming more difficult to freely practice religion, a private U.S. research group has reported. Pew said government restrictions and public hostility involving religion grew in some of the most populous countries from mid-2006 to mid-2009. And we asked, does this tie in with forcing us, scaring us, herding us into a one-world system? Our final post on holyhexes.com, coming soon. Probably not to too many theaters near you. It looks rather low budget, but coming attractions, Suing the Devil, popular with Christian audiences. Again, from goddiscussion.com, Suing the Devil has been described by some pastors as the best Christian film ever made. Pre-screenings this summer packed theaters with standing room only crowds, and according to a press release linked for you on the ChristianNewsWire.com, the film was so popular with pastors and their flock that at one screening, 1,000 people were turned away. In the film, Luke O'Brien, a washed-up janitor turned night law student, decides to sue Satan, played by Malcolm freaking McDowell. He decides to sue Satan for $8 trillion. On the last day before Luke files a default judgment, Satan appears to defend himself, and on his legal team are 10 of the country's best trial lawyers, with actors like Dennis Cole, Jeff Gannon, and Annie Lee. The entire world watches Legal TV, also starring Corbin Burnson, Tom Sizemore, to see who will win the trial of the century. It's writer-director Tim Chey, C-H-E-Y, says, at a time when 65% of American Christians don't believe the devil exists, Suing the Devil aims its guns at Satan's strategy. 2 Corinthians 2:11 says, not to be ignorant of the devil's scheme, yet the majority of Christians are blind as a bat.
Call him a nutcase, but one Luke O'Brien is suing the devil today.
Luke O'Brien versus Satan.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're suing Satan.
Are you taking this case seriously?
Well, of course I'm taking it seriously.
Do you honestly believe that that's the devil?
The devil is alive and he's well.
Do you expect the public to actually buy your Satan?
Well, do you expect the public to really buy the fact that you are $12,000 in debt on your credit cards?
Just want to say, huge fan, I adore you, I worship you, I love Kiss.
What?
Kiss.
I hate Kiss. I'm a Tom Jones man.
The best trial lawyers this world has to offer.
Mr. Think Tank, Harvard Law. Mr. Ice, Oxford.
IQ 214, Yale Law. The youngest and best litigator in New York.
Ms. Shive,
Sydney University. Don't the name fool you. She is a shark in the courtroom.
Mr. Innocent, Columbia Law. Represents all the casinos in Vegas.
It's being billed as trial of the century, being seen by audiences around the world.
The verdict should be rendered against him. $8 trillion.
Order!
Mr. O'Brien, have you ever done internet porn?
How can you sit there with that smug look on your face?
7 years! And still using profanity and making racist remarks.
Mr. O'Brien, what other racist thing have you said?
Are you a racist?
No, Mr. O'Brien.
Are you a member of the KKK?
What sort of person are you? You call yourself a Christian?
And then something happened. Of all the Bible fell out of the glove compartment. And I backslidden so far from God that I was willing to kill a man.
Quinn, I'm gonna ask you something. You gotta be honest with me, alright? Are you sick, honey?
I want you to win it. You hear me? I want you to win it.
How did I get to where I become? A man who hated people instead of loving my neighbor.
Who is Jesus Christ?
You want, what's that got to do with anything, Your
Objection.
Honor?
Objection!
Mr. Defendant, will you take the witness stand when you are asked to?
I take sheer delight in creating havoc in the world. I created noise! Unlike the dumb idiots you are, you worshipped it! Humans love the noise I create. And you know what? Noise drowns out any thoughts of God. What's the matter? You shut off the music of hell!
I said, get thee behind me, Satan, in the name of Jesus Christ!
Every day, there's people that die. And guess what? They're in just two places, and they're not really dead. They're either alive in heaven or alive in hell. You pick.
From suing Satan on holy hexes to Soros selling on Food World Order, from naturalnews.com, asking the question, why is George Soros selling gold and buying farmland? Food prices are skyrocketing all across the globe, and there's no end in sight. The UN says food inflation is currently at 30% a year, and the fast eroding value of the U.S. dollar is causing food prices to appear even higher in contrast to a weakening currency. As the dollar drops in value due to runaway money printing at the Federal Reserve, the cost to import foods from other nations looks to double in just the next 2 years, and possibly every 2 years thereafter. That's probably why investors around the globe are flocking to farmland as the new growth industry. Quote, investors are pouring into farmland in the U.S. and parts of Europe, Latin America, and Africa as global food prices soar, end quote, reports Bloomberg Magazine. They continue, a fund controlled by George Soros, the billionaire hedge fund manager, owns 23.4% of South American farmland venture Adecoagro South America, S.A. And, of course, we, the plebs, the citizens, the civilians, don't have the capital to do that. Continuing on foodworldorder.com to the 818 binge and purge, profit, problems, and poop. Somalia's famine for profit and the whole larger East African food crisis.
Agriculture ministers from the 191 members of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization have gathered in Rome. This is the second emergency meeting hosted by the UN in less than a month to take action in support of the drought-hit Horn of Africa. According to the FAO, the region urgently needs an additional $103 million to rebuild agriculture and fight famine. At risk are about 3.6 million people in Somalia and 12 million across the Horn of Africa, including in Ethiopia and Kenya, the UN says. In a separate initiative, the Organization of Islamic Conference has pledged $350 million of humanitarian aid to provide urgently needed food, health, shelter, water, and sanitation aid. Britain's also increased its donation by $48 million, while the United States recently said it would give an additional $105 million. However, raising funds is not enough to help the Somalis. The security problems in the country make delivery of aid harder. Somalia's been torn by civil war since 1991, and the government has little control over the country. The Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab made what it called a strategic withdrawal from the capital, Mogadishu, earlier this month. But government forces and African peacekeepers still struggle with rebel resistance and looting. Early this week, the Associated Press news agency reported sacks of grain, peanut butter snacks, and other food staples intended for famine victims were being stolen and sold in the markets. It said 50% of all aid could be stolen, citing an unnamed official. The UN says it's been investigating food theft in Somalia for 2 months. The UN's foreign personnel carries out the aid delivery through local contractors and barely leave their base due to security problems. Theft of aid is accepted to be very common, according to local people. AP found 8 sites where thousands of sacks of food aid were sold in bulk with UN stamps on them from the governments of the US, Japan and Kuwait. The WFP says the scale of alleged theft is implausible and suggested the diversion of food aid amounts to only 1% of the stocks the organisation is bringing into Mogadishu. 5 areas of Somalia are officially in a state of famine, and the rest of southern Somalia could follow within the next 4 to 6 weeks, says the UN. This has driven hundreds of thousands of people to refugee camps and the main cities in search of food. Lack of control over the country is putting the lives of these people in danger and also hinders the delivery of humanitarian aid to them. Somalia's transitional government declared a state of emergency last weekend, and the Prime Minister called on the international community to create a new force to protect food aid convoys and the camps.
So from Somalia to Southwest America, Arizona among the worst states for family food hardship.
Arizona is among the worst states in the nation when it comes to a family's ability to put food on the table. According to a new report from the Food Research and Action Center, Arizona tied with Louisiana for 7th worst, with 29% of families with children saying they ran out of money to buy food at least once in the past year. Katie Kale of the Arizona Community Action Association says some states are seeing economic recovery and job growth, but not Arizona.
In most parts of the state, housing values are going down. We're seeing higher unemployment numbers. In some of our outlying parts of the state, the rural areas like in Yuma County, you know, they're facing 25% or above unemployment.
Kale says the number of Arizonans receiving SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps, is still rising, topping 1.1 million for the first time last month. She says the community can help by donating to or volunteering at one of the state's food banks. Kale says the report shows the food hardship problem isn't confined to Arizona's rural areas.
Tucson actually came out as the nation's 15th worst city, with 28.7% of households with children not having enough money to buy food. And the Phoenix Mesa Scottsdale metro area came out at 20th.
Food and nutrition programs for children are part of the current budget-cutting debate in Congress. In Kale's view, this would be a bad time to further weaken federal and state safety net programs for low-income families who have nowhere else to turn.
It's important that we have a balanced budget. It's important that we make sure that we're being sound with our money choices as a country and as a state. But it's also, some would argue, more important that we make sure that children are fed and are safe and are healthy.
She says a lack of nutritious food can also hurt a child's behavior and performance in school and even impede normal childhood development.
And that's how the agenda works. More audio and the PDF report linked up for you from Kiko News. Expert says GMOs to blame for problems in Colorado plants and animals. That's from Boulder Weekly. Hepatitis A shot, class action filed against a North Carolina Olive Garden. We have the PDF of the summons and complaint on that story from foodpoisonjournal.com. Suit filed against Cargill on behalf of an Oregon child related to the recent ground turkey recall. And the last note on this binge and purge stays in Oregon as lab tests confirm E. coli came from deer poop in Oregon strawberry fields. Last week we referenced blaming Bambi. Ha ha. An interesting one from the Associated Press that is Dateline Portland, Oregon, so I had to post it up on Food World Order. How to plan ahead to make buying in bulk pay off. Grocery shoppers will tell you that their bills are getting bigger from week to week. Many are already bargain hunting, buying store brands and using coupons for the best deals. But food prices are expected to rise further. The USDA estimates that grocery prices will rise 3.5% to 4% this year and 3% to 4% next year. So what about exploring the option of buying bulk? It may seem counterintuitive to buy more to save more, but with the right approach, you can pocket significant savings. And we give you the flashback to just last month on Food World Order. Bring your own bag at the coming soon no packaging store in Austin, Texas. Bulk is ultimately the way to go. Last story on foodworldorder.com. Honey laundering, tainted and counterfeit Chinese honey floods into the U.S., from grist.org and foodsafetynews.com, a third or more of all the honey consumed in the U.S. is likely to have been smuggled in from China and may be tainted with illegal antibiotics and heavy metals. A Food Safety News investigation has documented that millions of pounds of honey banned as unsafe in dozens of countries are being imported and sold here in record quantities. and the flow of Chinese honey continues despite assurances from the FDA and other feds that hundreds of millions of pounds reaching store shelves were authentic and safe following the widespread arrest and convictions of major smugglers over the last 2 years. With yet another flashback for you to January of this year on foodworldorder.com, USDA cracks down on honey laundering. So that's the end of all the other sister sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, but we end with the Chinese honey laundering on Food World Order. Transitions us right back to the main site, the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com. USAID's believe China probably examined the stealth copter in Pakistan.
Pakistan returned the downed U.S. stealth helicopter SEAL Team 6 left behind after its raid on Osama bin Laden's compound in May. But according to reports, not before letting a team of Chinese military engineers take a good long look at the helicopter's stealth technology. The Financial Times and Reuters broke the story, citing unnamed U.S. intelligence officials. The Times reports. The U.S. now has information that Pakistan, particularly the ISI, gave access to the Chinese military to the downed helicopter in Abbottabad. The Chinese engineers were allowed to survey the wreckage and take photographs of it, as well as take samples of the special stealth skin that allowed the American team to enter Pakistan undetected by radar. The helicopter was detonated and abandoned by SEAL Team 6, so it's unclear what technological insights the Chinese could have gained. CBS national security correspondent David Martin says the technology was both innovative and exclusive to the U.S.
What have we found out about this technology, and just how much of a secret was this?
Well, certainly nobody knew it was on helicopters. I mean, this stealth technology has been around for 20, 30 years now. But to put it on a helicopter does some things that make the helicopter harder to fly.
Pakistan's top intelligence agency, the ISI, has denied the report. Still, CNN national security contributor Fran Townsend says China and Pakistan could develop similar technology, or they could simply sell the collected photos and samples to the highest bidder.
There's been some history of technology exchange between Pakistan and China, and so you really do worry about them sharing it with China, who also may reverse engineer and try manufacturing and distributing. And so this represents a real vulnerability in the proliferation of this kind of material in a very uncontrolled way for the United States, where it could be used against us.
Although White House officials have yet to publicly confirm these reports, one source told the Financial Times that President Barack Obama and his administration are discussing the incident and weighing options for a response.
The sultry drama continues after SEAL Team 6 was recently assassinated. So, again, we reference this. The supposed raid on bin Laden had this copter that crashed, and you saw photos of that after May Day on the high occult holy day, where we always pull off major worldwide operations or announcements or sacrificial slaughters. We saw the copter. Is it possible some SEAL Team 6 members died in the raid, and the recent weekend war losses, the deadliest weekend ever in Afghanistan 2 weekends ago, was that the cleanup operation of the rest of SEAL Team 6 as the entire Osama psychological operation rather unravels? But again, with so many things going on, and as we've just spent 15 minutes noting that people can barely feed themselves, it's hard to think they're going to take the time to break down the massive, big, big, big lies that are being pulled over their eyes every single day. Let's get our related geopolitical updates posted below this story about USAID's believing that China probably examined stealth copter in Pakistan. Bombs tear through 17 Iraqi cities, 63 killed in coordinated attacks. More on that from AJC.com. Egypt to charge Israeli Mossad agent, quote-unquote, with espionage. That is from Haaretz. And Israel retaliates following attacks that killed 14.
At least 14 people are reported to have been killed in 3 attacks in southern Israel close to the Egyptian border. The attacks appear to have been coordinated and targeted a passenger bus, a private car, and a group of soldiers. Media reports say 7 Israelis and 7 gunmen were killed in the 3 attacks. The government has not confirmed these figures. In the first attack, gunmen opened fire on a bus carrying civilians to the Red Sea resort of Eilat, injuring at least 10 people. Israeli troops then chased the assailants before opening fire on them. Israel believes the attackers were from Gaza and entered the country by crossing the border with Egypt. The Israeli government issued this condemnation. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned those who attack Israel will, quote, pay a very heavy price. He said he will not allow terrorists to ramp up attacks via Egypt. Hamas has rejected suggestions that it was behind the killings. This spokesman denied any involvement in the attacks. Israeli special forces have been called in to patrol the border. Meanwhile, Palestinian medics quoted by the AFP news agency said that Israel had launched airstrikes on Gaza that left at least six people dead.
An interesting note to that is if you Google news search Israel retaliates, how many results come up through the archives through the decades? But continuing our related geopolitical updates, the White House now finally says it. The Obamasiah is firm, and Hillary is the shillery, putting out the message that Syria's Assad must resign.
The Assad government has now been condemned by countries in all parts of the world and can look only to Iran for support for its brutal and unjust crackdown. This morning, President Obama called on Assad to step aside and announced the strongest set of sanctions to date targeting the Syrian government. The transition to democracy in Syria has begun, and it's time for Assad to get out of the way. As President Obama said this morning, no outside power can or should impose on this transition. It is up to the Syrian people to choose their own leaders in a democratic system based on the rule of law, and dedicated to protecting the rights of all citizens, regardless of ethnicity, religion, sect, or gender. We understand the strong desire of the Syrian people that no foreign country should intervene in their struggle, and we respect their wishes. At the same time, we will do our part to support their aspirations for a Syria that is democratic, just, and inclusive. And we will stand up for their universal rights and dignity by pressuring the regime and Assad personally to get out of the way of this transition. The people of Syria deserve a government that respects their dignity, protects their rights, and lives up to their aspirations. Assad is standing in their way.
The intelligence operation, commonly referred to as the Arab Spring, continues as Shillery speaks out of both sides of her mouth. But as we glance at Google News, we see that even just this morning, dozens of protesters in anti-government demonstrations have been killed. The rest of our geopolitical updates. 12 signs we're getting dangerously close to war with Syria from endoftheamericandream.com. UK Prime Minister Cameron says moral collapse to blame for Britain's riots. That's from BeliefNet. Unnamed U.S. official denies drones have killed 168 kids in Pakistan. And North Korea angered as South Korea stages anti-terror drills. And the last related geopolitical update, 300,000 illegals dare to dream as U.S. unsurprisingly eases the deportation policy as we are being led towards the formation of a North American Union, which will not be possible without some sort of catalyzing catastrophic event, perhaps mirroring some type of class war, race war, civil unrest, austerity riots, maybe? Helter Skelter. Whistleblower alleges SEC illegally destroyed documents. An enforcement lawyer at the Securities and Exchange Commission says that the agency illegally destroyed files and documents related to thousands of early-stage investigations over the last 20 years, according to information released Wednesday by congressional investigators. The destroyed files comprised records of at least 9,000 preliminary inquiries into matters involving notorious individuals like Bernard Madoff, as well as several major Wall Street firms that later were the subject of scrutiny after the 2008 financial crisis, including Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Citigroup, B of A. The SEC is the very agency that is charged with making sure that Wall Street firms retain records of their own activities and has brought numerous enforcement cases against firms for failing to do so. More on this story from Rolling Stone, whose Matt Taibbi broke this story. Amazing work on the econo crash and the fake money system. Completely blind to the massive terror event of 9/11. But more as well from CBS and even letters written from Senator Chuck Grassley asking what the hell's going on. And this is, again, limited hangout. Let's get our related econo crash updates. As the report says, U.S. investigating the S&P over mortgages. That is from Reuters, and that sounds like retaliation for dumping our credit rating. 20 signs of possible economic apocalypse in 2012. That is from the economiccollapseblog.com as well. This other top 10 list, 10 signs that economic riots and civil unrest inside the U.S. are now more likely than ever. And we can check out the poll from Rasmussen. Half of the U.S. believes austerity will lead to violent unrest. Again, planting the seed, planting the meme. It's the predictive programming. I saw it on TV. The Bad Hair Bandit nets 18 bank robberies in just 9 months.
And in lighter news now, a bank robber known as the Bad Hair Bandit may have struck again. The woman who wears a variety of unattractive wigs, is already wanted for 18 bank robberies in Oregon and Washington State. And now she's suspected of making off with more than $1,000 from a bank in Butte, Montana. Now, despite the bizarre getup, the FBI, though, says the Bad Hair Bandit is actually considered dangerous.
That hair is considered dangerous. That was an Elvis wig in one of those get-ups.
I don't know how that's the lighter side of the news, as again, we're documenting quite well for you the return of the age of the Bonnie and Clydes and the Mickey and Mallory gangs, as again, things fall apart on purpose. State study online gambling to bring needed revenue. We referenced this on Cyberspace War, but we want to reference again on EconoCrash, because as we said, they'll kill the pirate quote-unquote domains so they can bring you their controlled operation. That's what gangsters do. The last note, I wanted to get the clip, but I didn't have the time, and we may not have the time to do all the other remaining clips that we have coming up in the blistering news purge. But the last note on related econo crash updates is a clip from The Big Picture from ex-Portland, Oregon resident and talk show host Tom Hartman. Went to D.C., got a show on Russia Today, asking the question, what is corporate personhood and why does it matter? This story has been making the rounds, as again, as Mitt Romney said, corporations are people, and this meme is there, like so many others. This is one we will probably have to address quite soon with, hopefully, someone much more knowledgeable about all of this than myself. That closes all the whistleblower, econo crash, controlled demolition of a fake economy story, my friends. And as we come to the mighty 818 news purge, let's take a quick musical break and a chance to go pissing in the wind.
I've been pissing in the wind, a chance to foolish grin. And dribbled on my chin. Now the ground shifts beneath my feet. The faces that I greet never know my name. Just give me something, I'll take nothing. Just give me something, I'll take nothing. Now the drought is crippled by the rain. It hammers on my pain. We lose ourselves again. But all we need is to find a place to look. Our worm is on its watch it swim against the water's flow. In doubt, the courage grows with no guarantee. Just give me something, I'll take nothing. Just give me something, I'll take nothing. Moral to the tale, as tortoise catches snail, a strong heart will prevail. It keeps on pumping, it still needs something. Just give it something.
Badly Drawn Boy from his fantastic debut record, The Age of the Bewilder Beast. That was Pissing in the Wind, and this is the 818 News Purge on MediaMonarchy.com called Pissing in the Wind, and this is where it will all come together. This is where the vulgar picture gets painted. We begin with BioWars EnviroHealth. U.S. knew in days that Fukushima had melted down. More on that from WashingtonsBlog.com. And how do we know? Because we've got the Global Hawk drones everywhere. We also learn in that U.S. government considered the evacuation of 90,000 U.S. citizens in Tokyo. Radioactive rain in Toronto as large-scale government cover-up exposed. That's from the IntelHub.com. And let's get a little blast from the past from the invaluable ENENews.com. And that would be the Nuclear Regulatory Commission essentially lied about the 1959 Simi Valley nuke disaster.
In 1959, just 30 miles from downtown Los Angeles, a little-known nuclear disaster began to unfold at an important Cold War facility. The Santa Susana Field Laboratory, created by the government's Atomic Energy Commission and operated by Rocketdyne, played a vital defense role by producing powerful rockets. 2,800-acre site was built in the hills above Simi Valley, a town of 8,000 just west of Los Angeles's San Fernando Valley. Besides rockets, it was home to several experimental nuclear reactors, which the Atomic Energy Commission hoped could be commercially viable. One of them used sodium instead of water as a coolant. It was known as the Sodium Reactor Experiment, or SRE. But the experiment would soon trigger a technological nightmare.
This reactor was built in an era of nuclear cowboys. The Atomic Energy Commission came out of the Manhattan Project. There was a culture of secrecy. There was a sense of excitement about pushing the limit on these reactors.
On July 26, 1959, technicians barely managed to manually shut down the sodium reactor when temperature and radiation readings quickly jumped. Then, after 2 hours of basic inspections, they made a baffling decision.
They started up the reactor anyway.
the operating director for about two more weeks before the radiation levels, and there were so many signs of trouble that it was thought it was time to stop and get real serious about finding out what was going wrong.
When they dropped a camera into the reactor core, they discovered that 13 of 43 radioactive fuel rods were damaged and partially melted. And because this was an experimental reactor, a thick concrete containment structure, such a familiar and vital part of more modern reactors, wasn't required.
From 1959 to right now, the aforementioned lying NRC right now says a special inspection is underway at a nuke plant near Miami. Again, from ENENews.com, DigitalJournal.com reporting on yet another oil spill in the North Sea. And the update to that from The Guardian, Shell finds a second oil leak in the North Sea. But we hop back to my neighbor to the north. Seattle Green Jobs Program, a bust.
Where are the green jobs and green projects the city of Seattle promised after winning a coveted $20 million federal grant? To date, only 14 people have been hired and even fewer projects completed. Como 4 problem solver Michelle Esteban asks why.
For us, it was a disappointment.
Michael Wu remembers Earth Day Eve 2010 well. Seattle won a $20 million federal grant for energy efficiency projects. The mayor said the money would create 2,000 weatherization jobs and 2,000 homes would be weatherized. That was more than a year ago.
How many of those folks have gone to work in this sector? Not many.
Michael Wu's nonprofit, Got Green, works with the city to train workers like Ymir Sek.
All right, I'm good to go.
But Sek is one of only 14 people hired so far, and only 3 homes have been weatherized.
To me, it seems mythical.
Wu is critical of the city. He says it oversold the rewards of the project.
When I heard that 2,000 number, I said, oh, we're in trouble. And I'm a partner with the city.
So to paraphrase Mark Twain, I think news of our bust is a little premature.
Joshua Curtis is in charge of dispersing the $20 million and says there's good reason the city is nowhere near its goal.
You can do it quick, or you can do it right. And so we really focus on doing it right.
Curtis insists setting up this kind of program, building partnerships, hiring staff, and marketing is time-consuming. It took nearly a year. He says the rebates and financing for homeowners willing to weatherize their homes just opened in April. He says only 3 homes are completed, but 400 homes are in the queue.
In 3 months, in 6 months, in a year, let's have the conversation.
You can count on it. The city will have to act fast to reach its goal. Timing is running out, and so will the money in 2013. Michelle Esteban, Como 4 News.
The city is also coordinating energy audits for large-scale building owners. So far, Harborview, Swedish, Virginia Mason, Group Health, and the Washington Athletic Club have signed up. Seattle's Community Power Works project can tell you if you qualify for a rebate.
So if the green shirts of the coming Soylent Green State don't get you, maybe brain-eating amoebas will.
We have a special summer health warning now for parents. A tiny killer bug that breeds in freshwater ponds and lakes is being blamed for the deaths of 2 children who came into contact with the bug while they were swimming. ABC News Chief Health and Medical Editor Dr. Richard Besser is here with the details, and this is a deadly parasite.
It really is, George. You know, every common risk factor was there. Summer months, southern states, and a heat wave. And that's what it can take to turn an incredibly common creature into a freakishly uncommon killer.
These are Naegleria amoebas, and they live in just about every warm, murky body of fresh water, every summer swimming hole, lake, and pond. We're surrounded by them, and most of the time, you'd never know it. But 9-year-old Christian Alexander Strickland of Virginia and 16-year-old Courtney Nash of Florida each developed amoebic brain infections after summertime swims. Before they could even be diagnosed, they were dead.
There have only been a handful, maybe less than a handful of cases that have been diagnosed early, appropriately treated, and have survived.
These parasites enter the body through the nose. They then make their way to the brain, where they destroy brain tissue and cause meningitis. Headache, fever, and nausea develop in the first week. As the condition worsens, so do the symptoms. Confusion, loss of balance, even hallucinations. Doctors rarely suspect it, and even early treatment is no guarantee of a cure. It's that serious, and that quick. The patient is gone in less than 2 weeks.
Fortunately, this is a very, very rare occurrence.
You know, that's so important to remember. This is incredibly rare. Even with millions of people swimming in fresh water each summer, there are only 3 or 4 cases a year in the entire country. Now, so amoebic brain infections are the medical equivalent of being struck by lightning. But still, George, it's so sobering for a parent.
Of course it is. So is there anything you can do to lessen the risk?
Well, I mean, if you don't swim, you have no risk, but I don't think you need to go there. The one thing you could do is use nose clips, because this organism, unlike just about any other, it enters through your nose. So if you're swimming in a freshwater pond, you could put on a nose clip.
Okay, Rich Besser, thanks very much.
Our own little bee movie is all coming true for us. As we continue down the 818 News Purge, pissing in the wind, we get two drug war updates, and it's the always telling after moves after a botched black op. ATF promotes supervisors involved in the controversial Fast and Furious operation. That's from the Los Angeles Times, and Fast and Furious is the DEA and ATF running guns to Mexico gangs to, again, help bring in a North American union. Feds bust Iraqi-Mexican drug operation in California, and yes, that can only come from NationalTerrorAlert.com. And our last note quickly on the drug war from Raw Story, Slick Barry dodges medical marijuana question.
My name is Patricia Morrill, and I just want to say that I'm really excited that you're here in Cannon Falls. And my question is there something we can do about the rising cost of prescription drugs? And number two, if you can't legalize marijuana, why can't we just legalize medical marijuana to help the people that need it?
Well, you know, a lot of states are making decisions about medical marijuana. As a controlled substance, the issue then is, you know, is it being prescribed by a doctor as opposed to, you know, well, I'll leave it at that. With respect to prescription drugs, the prescription drug program that now is part of Medicare obviously has been very helpful, but the costs had been going up and up and up. So part of the Affordable Care Act, health care reform, also known as Obamacare. By the way, you know what? Let me tell you. I have no problem with folks saying Obama cares. I do care.
Thank you, Satan. Yes, we can continue the war on drugs, which is a murderous fraud. We segue into our media and memes. Watch the Throne, a smack in the face to Black America. This comes from News1.com, and this is an African-American news source calling out the overblown hype, but not also the bizarre occult symbols and possible connections of Jay-Z and Kanye's new collaboration album called Watch the Throne. News1.com calls it a smack in the face to Black America because they don't talk about anything that's affecting Black Americans. It's all about, look how rich I am. But as Truthquake.com notes, Jay-Z and Kanye debut spooky Illuminati NWO-styled Watch the Throne. However, and this is so fitting, since we heard from him last week, and I don't think I made the point when we were doing the mixtape here live in the studio, mixtape 11 last week, that hip-hop used to be revolutionary. And we played music called Revolutionary Generation from Public Enemy, going all the way back to 1990. Well, here it is, August 19th, 2011, and Chuck D put out a response track to Jay-Z and Kanye's Otis, as in Otis Redding, and called it Notice, Know This.
No disrespect to our rap heroes, the late great Otis, but notice and notice in this time. Respect to you two heroes, but trickle down got us less than zero. Respect. Last I checked, prison industrial complex, no swagger. Millions, billions, trillions, what's winning? Is a million miles of what people's feeling, no gas. Try a little compassion, 2020 fashion. Style your insides from outside. Faster broke seatbelt, unemployed, ride through hell. SMTHOMGOLOL. Notice, like Otis. Notice, got no. Like Otis. Notice, notice.
They're just working. Have we all forgotten Latinos and black picking electronic cotton, no stacks. 16.2% is depression inside us, recession. Spending money and time on how we dressing. Losing homes, these stats be on smartphones. Don't need no new slang to express the pain of what's really going on in the game of life. Now what? Please discuss no education, knowledge and self. 45 years of fucked up health. Notice, y'all the heroes, notice.
Chuck D putting Jay-Z and Kanye on notice, and it's because of the content there, and it's worth second and third listens, and go check out the video. It's on youtube.com/publicenemy, and it has the lyrics along with it, but it's because of that content that someone as legendary as Chuck D of Public Enemy has a little low-quality YouTube video with a couple thousand views. Meanwhile, the fakes and the fronts like Jay-Z, Jehovah, and the rest front. Continuing the media memes, Abercrombie and Fitch asks Jersey Shore Mook the situation to change his clothes. Study says 1 hour of TV can shorten your life by 22 minutes. Sesame Street says Bert and Ernie are not gay, as online petition urges the puppet pals to wed. More on that from KPTV. The latest slut walk drew hundreds to Washington streets, and that would be Washington again, my neighbor to the north. We had our own slut walk here in Portland back on July 31st, and this all swirls around comments made, I believe, by a Toronto police officer, essentially commenting on rape and you dress that way so you're asking for it garbage. So there have been a stream of slut walks going on around the world. Other related, seemingly unrelated media and memes, forthcoming Vertigo comic by Douglas Rushkoff has ADD. More on that from technicult.net. Gualtiero Giacopetti, the creator of the Mondo Cain shockumentaries, Italian director, dies at the age of 91. And our last media meme note sets us into murder and mayhem quite well as Islamist death threats against the evil David Letterman.
A contributor to a popular internet website for radical Muslims has issued a threat against late-night comedian David Letterman. That's according to the Site Monitoring Service, a private intelligence organization that keeps an eye on jihadist websites like this one. The service says the threat was posted Tuesday in reaction to comments Letterman made on his show earlier this summer, shortly after the U.S. military announced a drone strike in Pakistan had killed an Al-Qaeda leader. A spokesman for the FBI office in New York says it is looking into the threat. CBS and a spokesman for Letterman would not comment on the posting, and CBS declined to make available a transcript of Letterman's monologue on June 5th, the night he commented on the drone attack.
So there they were, our good friends at Site Intelligence. Well, if Rita Katz and her foreign intelligence agency connection say there was an Islamist threat against David Letterman, well, by God, it must be true. We joke sometimes, as we say, to not cry, and it's going to get even darker here as we go into murder and mayhem. And again, we'll reference and the link we give to digitaljournal.com. 5 dead, 40 hurt after stage collapse at Indiana State Fair. And you'll recall, I believe 2 weeks ago, we reported on the Ottawa stage collapse at a Cheap Trick concert. And we have yet another update from Speakeasy on the Wall Street Journal. Stage collapse at the Belgian Puckle Pop Festival has killed 3. That's just a few short hours ago, as we see the copycat effect waves build. But how it happens, we can't exactly pinpoint, and we sometimes just have to rub our chin and say, sinister forces? Breivik accompanies police on 8-hour reconstruction of the Norway nightmare.
Anders Behring Breivik was led around the island. He's been describing in detail his killings to police. Breivik admitted to the terror attacks, but denies criminal guilt because he believes the massacre was necessary to save Norway from multiculturalism. You can see him in those pictures. He's in a red top. He's also wearing a bulletproof vest. There he is, surrounded by heavily armed protection. He's also got ankle cuffs and handcuffs. And he is showing the police what he did by standing in a shooting position. This visit lasted 8 hours. It happened on Saturday, and prosecutors say that he was calm and cooperative.
I don't know why they had to be so overly cautious, because it's not like the second and third gunmans are still there, like all the other eyewitnesses reported, but were never followed up on. We provide the flashback link to you for the 722 massive attack in the Norway nightmare that killed 77. But we bring it yet again up to date, as it's that ugly hot part of the summer and we're getting ready to go back to school and we're getting ready to brace ourselves for customs and anniversaries and all of the things that swirl around. And again, we end up in America's Wang in Florida. Police arrest Florida teen in school bomb plot.
Police say a tip from the public helped them thwart a bomb attack at this North Tampa high school that was set to happen when students return next week. And they have arrested a 17-year-old, Jared Kano, who was expelled from the school over a year ago. Police say Kano was arrested after they searched the apartment he shares with his mother and found bomb-making materials in his room. Police say those materials included shrapnel, timing and fusing devices, a fuel source and other materials for pipe bombs, plus a journal with drawings of rooms at the school and statements about his intent to kill.
There were two individual faculty members that were specific targets, and then he also mentioned his desire to cause more casualties than were suffered at Columbine.
The school's principal said the teen's expulsion last year would have made it tough for him to carry out the alleged plot.
It would have been a red flag the minute he walked onto campus, what they called the main office. And that's important for us to understand, is that my teachers, my staff are going to react appropriately to that. And the response of someone who's not allowed to be on campus to be on campus would have been a phone call before it started, before he was able to walk around or do anything else that he wanted to do.
Police say they are familiar with Kano because he has been arrested several times as a juvenile.
And they indeed found a manifesto written by Jared that outlined minute by minute what his actions were going to be on the first day of school, to include detonating explosive devices through the school. There were two individual faculty members that were specific targets, and then he also mentioned his desire to cause more casualties than were suffered at Columbine. We had officers found material in his room that could be used for making explosive devices. We called our bomb team in, the experts, and they in fact said that yes, the material that he had could be made into explosive devices and could cause serious injury up to and including death if they were to be detonated. And the material that they found included fuel sources, shrapnel, plastic tubing, timing, and fusing devices within his room. The individual, we did not find any firearms at that apartment yesterday, but Jared Kano has been arrested in the past for carrying a concealed firearm that was stolen in a burglary that he committed. So he does have an extensive criminal record. He was charged yesterday with threatening to throw, project, place, or discharge a destructive device, possession of bomb-making materials, and also cultivation of marijuana in his room at his house, and possession of marijuana and drug paraphernalia as well.
Oh, well, they have to include that. So anybody that smokes marijuana must be a murderous, crazy person, and they should be put away, right? Because all crime is terror. Not to diminish that again as we brace ourselves, as we see these waves of copycat effects. Man refuses to come off Tulsa telecom tower for the fifth day. That's from Raw Story. Then the update. Man perches in Tulsa radio tower for sixth day. Viewers riveted. That's from the Los Angeles Times. Unfortunately, right now, There's nothing like a peaceful ending to an unprecedented six-day police standoff with a man perched on a radio transmission tower to put a spring in your step, but that was the scene in Tulsa. Finally, Tulsa breathed a sigh of relief after Tower Guy ordeal is over. And speaking of copycateffect.com, Lauren Coleman writes about the latest Tibetan monk immolation. And we return to the States, and it gets uglier in the murder and mayhem headlines. Pennsylvania cop shot dead after pointing stun gun at a man's dogs while responding to a domestic disturbance. Former NBA referee Troy Raymond commits suicide after probably killing his wife. 8 injured by lightning bolt in Florida Marine Park. Man killed after his ex offers $1,000 or a stack to kill him on Facebook. And he's dead. And it gets worse. Louisiana man admits beheading his 7-year-old son.
A Thibodeau man is behind bars tonight in the gruesome murder of a 7-year-old. The child was found decapitated outside of his home in the 400 block of West 7th Street. Monica Hernandez tells us how the child and his suspected killer are connected.
7-year-old Jory Leret was a special needs child confined to a wheelchair. Tonight, his horrific murder sent shockwaves through his quiet neighborhood.
It's really crazy. You don't expect something like this to happen so close to your house, you know, to your home, but I guess anything can happen nowadays.
When you have a 7-year-old child, an innocent child that's killed, you know, that had nowhere to protect himself, you know, that's tragic in itself. You know, it's a shock to this community.
Police have charged 30-year-old Jeremiah Wright with first-degree murder in Leret's death. They say Wright confessed to killing his live-in girlfriend's son, but he had little to say when our cameras were rolling.
Why did you do it?
Any words for your girlfriend? Police say Wright decapitated Leret and dismembered his body over his home's kitchen sink. Police say a passerby saw Leret's head on the sidewalk outside the family's home this afternoon. It was near a garbage bag with the child's dismembered body. Police arrived a minute later.
This is the way the world ends. Brooklyn rapper Campaign found torched in an SUV in New Jersey. Woman presumed dead after being swept over Niagara Falls. Suspect in San Rafael hotel standoff dead. Russell Armstrong, estranged husband of Real Housewives TV show, commits suicide, and a drunken Gerard Depardieu kicked off a plane after peeing on the floor. More on that meme from Vancouver Sun as we jump to another meme. Bat on Wisconsin flight prompts search for passengers in rabies probe. That's from the Boston Herald. Meanwhile, in New Hampshire, a bat interrupts the town hall meeting. More on that from UPI as we keep connecting some type of dots as we paint some vulgar picture. And we move to Obamasiah updates on this 818 news purge pissing in the wind. Bachman barely beats Paul by 152 votes in the Ames straw poll in Iowa. More on that from the oft-cited GodDiscussion.com. And as long as we're talking about Bachman, let's talk about her shady fundamentalist and CIA asset and convicted of terrorism in Uganda guy running her faith outreach. More on that from the IntelHub.com. GodDiscussion.com found it worthwhile enough to post Alex Jones's Michelle Bachman has zombie eyes rant, as we have noticed, actually, seemingly Alex Jones getting more attention than Ron Paul, as we'll note in just a quick moment. From TheGazette.com, Secret Service agent charged with drunken driving in Decorah, Iowa. So yes, the Ames straw poll was there, but you may recall that the Obamasiah had recently visited. So having drunk Secret Service officers the night before a public presidential event sure reminds me of November 21st, 1963 in Dallas, Texas. Paul trounces Perry in presidential poll. Perry, who now also says his HPV mandatory vaccine order was a mistake. Paul rebukes Romney, notes that corporations are not people. It's just a quick 30-second video on YouTube, but the audio is kind of bad. But of course, Ron Paul points out that Romney is wrong and people are people. And again, as we noted, we're going to have to dive more into corporate personhood and the myths and the legends and the realities. But it is true, and now studies show it, and of course, now the well-meaning left knows it, that the corporate media attempts to marginalize Ron Paul by just ignoring him.
May I say one thing about Ron Paul? I find it odd for me to be a Ron Paul supporter, but he lost to Michelle Bachmann by 0.9 percentage point in a straw poll that isn't supposed to pick winners, but it's supposed to tell us which way the wind is blowing. That's as good as a win. So we had a tie for first. But where is he on the morning shows this morning? Where are all the stories analyzing what it means that Ron Paul essentially tied for first place at Ames?
And what the reason that he's essentially being ignored is?
The media doesn't believe that Ron Paul has a hoot in hell's chance of winning the Iowa caucuses, winning the Republican nomination, or winning the presidency. So we're going to ignore him.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, Howard, because that's the one thing Donald Trump has ever been right about, is that he's unelectable. I mean, I think, you know, my favorite part of the debate Thursday night is that, you know, Rick Santorum broke the golden rule of Republican debates, and that's pretending Ron Paul is invisible, you know? So, I mean, I think you're right. There's more media attention than there is, you know, this is going to have to do with the actual results.
Well, just to remind people of the numbers here, this great victory won by Michelle Bachmann, and I'm not taking anything away from her. She got in late, and she's got a lot of momentum, but she got 4,823 votes. Ron Paul got a couple hundred less, as you say, Roger. Pawlenty with 2,293. Jackie Kucinich, you mentioned earlier Texas Governor Rick Perry.
The media doesn't believe that Ron Paul has a hoot in hell's chance of winning the Iowa caucuses, winning the Republican nomination, or winning the presidency. So we're going to ignore
it. We are in the business of kicking candidates out of the race.
We are in the business of kicking candidates out of the race. Nuggets of truth slipping forth in the controlled corporate media. And again, what does it say when comedy is the only way that seemingly gets out truth? As The Daily Show asks, how did Ron Paul become the 13th floor in a hotel?
So now with Pawlenty dropping out, Rick Perry dropping in, and Michelle Bachmann and Ron Paul dominating the Ames straw poll, we got ourselves a race.
We have a top tier. It is Mitt Romney, Rick Perry, and Michelle Bachmann.
We have a new top tier, and it's Perry, Mitt Romney, and Bachmann.
There's now a top tier in this race, at least for now, of Romney, Perry, and Bachmann.
I mean, I think that's fair to say.
Really fair to say? You're not forgetting, I don't know, anyone, say, an ideologically consistent 12-term congressman who came within less than 200 votes of winning a straw poll? Isn't anyone going to give that gentleman a little love?
There's a top tier now of Bachmann and Perry and Romney, and, you know, we haven't mentioned, and we should.
Thank you.
We haven't mentioned, and we should, Rick Santorum, who did really surprisingly well for the amount of money and resources he had.
Rick Santorum? He didn't get half of what Ron Paul got. He lost to the guy who lost so bad he dropped out of the race. Santorum?
We're looking at Mitt Romney, who continues to be the front runner, but we have Rick Perry as well, and now Michelle Bachmann. Let's not count out John Huntsman, though.
What? John Huntsman? Huntsman got 69 votes. If all of John Huntsman's supporters met at the same Ames, Iowa Quiznos, the fire marshal would say, yeah, that's fine, no problem. There's still some tables open in the back. Huntsman was the only Mormon running in the straw poll, and he came in second amongst Mormons. And by the way, this pretending Ron Paul doesn't exist for some reason has been going on for weeks.
A new Gallup survey showing Rick Perry running second to Mitt Romney, knocking down Iowa favorite Michelle Bachmann to fourth.
Behind who? Fourth behind who? How did libertarian Ron Paul become the 13th floor in a hotel? Why? What's wrong with... He is Tea Party patient zero. All that small government grassroots business, he planted that grass. These other folks, they're just moral majorities in a tri-cornered hat. Ron Paul's the real deal, and Fox News should love this guy. But watch the disconnect between the debate moderators at Fox's Thursday debate and the debate audience.
Iran does not have an air force that can come here, just like we did in Iraq, build up the war propaganda. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and they had nuclear weapons, and we had to go in. I'm sure you supported that war as well.
Yeah. Okay.
It's time we quit this. It's time. It's trillions of dollars we're spending on these wars.
What's with the smirk and the eye roll? The guy hears that the crowd goes nuts, and you do one of these. There goes crazy Uncle Ron, babbling about the unsustainability of multiple wars. Boop, boop. He's the one guy in the field, agree with him or don't agree with him, who doesn't go out of his way to regurgitate talking points or change what he believes to fit the audience he's in front of. And you're treating him like if this were Celebrity Apprentice, he'd be this guy. By the way, at the Ames, Iowa straw poll, used to be Huntsman 77-69. And even when the media does remember Ron Paul, it's only to reassure themselves how there's no need to remember Ron Paul.
Right now, live, right next to the bus behind us, Ron Paul is speaking. And seven of the candidates are here today. We have live pictures of Ron Paul, but you know what? We're talking about Sarah Palin, and we're talking about Rick Perry, the two people not in the race yet, Drew.
And guess what, Paul? If you get video of Sarah Palin or get a soundbite from her, bring that back to us. You can hold the Ron Paul stuff.
Excellent work. That got the well-meaning left talking. Let's hope it gets them thinking. And the day after that, I actually wore my old Ron Paul 2008 shirt to work, and it got folks talking and asking, and they had, of course, seen the clip. And, of course, he also correctly notes that all the kind of Tea Party stuff, that all grew from the Ron Paul InfoWars Campaign for Liberty alternative media 9/11 truth scene. Dig it. And the report, Project for Excellence in Journalism asks, are the media ignoring Ron Paul? Journalism.org for the story. An excellent breakdown on disquiet reservations, 11 reasons Paul would defeat Obama in a debate. For supporters, Ron Paul's message strikes a chord. That is from this morning's edition of Morning Edition on National Petroleum Radio. And as we tweeted and noted, for supporters, Ron Paul's message strikes a chord. For corporate-controlled media, not so much. And I really didn't want to get into all of this presidential, emotional, con game buffoonery quite so soon. But it seems to become obvious that someone like Ron Paul is the only kind of obvious choice. I just wish he was running third party. And as a way to wrap that up, our Obamasiah and related Congress critter updates. Disapproval of Congress hits all-time high of 84%. I believe that one goes to Gallup. And we reach Oregon oddities. City's choice for new parking meters facing federal probe. That's from Portland Daily Sun. And yes, shady deals, shady kickbacks. Big cities, small towns. Oregon, third worst for percentage of children with unemployed parents. That's from the Oregonian. Former Athena, Oregon cop sentenced to 10 years for sex crimes. Former Redmond, Oregon police officer sentenced for theft. And again, Lauren Coleman of CopycatEffect.com. D.B. Cooper decoded another thing we're sort of putting on our mental cue, if you will, of subjects to be explored further a little bit later. And our last note on Oregon oddities, Oregon pissers strike again as Olympic hopeful pees on an 11-year-old girl during a Portland to New York JetBlue flight. Do you see the memes? We give you the flashback link to the drunk Oregon man who recently urinated in our water reservoir and they had to drain it at the cost of tens of thousands of dollars, even though one drunk guy's piss is certainly no worse than all the pharmaceuticals and rocket fuel and all the garbage that's in our water, as per keeping with the eugenics agenda. But we move to our police state updates. And again, we reference the San Francisco cell shutdown. As even the Associated Press notes, safety issue or hint of Orwell? And the update from Threat Level: as the cell phone service stayed on during the San Francisco BART subway protest.
Protesters made a mess of rush hour on San Francisco's BART train system yesterday. Four downtown stations had to be shut down. Protesters were angry that BART managers cut off cell phone service at a station last Thursday, where a protest over police brutality was set to take place. Cell phone service was not cut yesterday, but police in riot gear did come in to clear the crowd.
Oh, those protesters, they sure made a mess because they're mad because the cell phones didn't work, not because the police made a mess of yet another unarmed person blown away who, you know, when they should just kind of be detained, they get tased, and when they should probably be tased, they get double-tapped. That's what it's about. Cops kill a guy. People are protesting. That's happening in San Francisco. That's happening in London. Is that happening in a city coming soon near you with some sort of related scenario? And we'll keep pissing in the wind on this news purge as Oakland officer shoots public urination suspect.
Other stories making headlines around the Bay Area. In Oakland, an officer-involved shooting occurred just after 7:30 this evening. It happened near the intersection of Fruitvale Avenue and Foothill Boulevard. There are reports of a male subject with a gunshot wound. The wound does not appear to be life-threatening.
Representative Benny Thompson, Democrat of Mississippi, on Monday called for the Transportation Security Administration to halt the implementation of a new behavioral screening program that is modeled after Israel's airport security screening methods. Democrat questions TSA over Israeli-style chat downs. And that's the last police state update. War whores, U.S. combat in Iraq is over. Except for all the airstrikes and deaths. More on that from allgov.com. Cost of war to American taxpayers? Yeah, don't even ask. Update from Blacklisted News on selling the wars with a video to go along with it. Noting, of course, image is everything when you're marketing a $3 trillion war machine. Last war whore note, Republican voters are losing their appetite for war. This relates again to Ron Paul and getting the most military donations. And we finally reach the end of the 818 News Purge, pissing in the wind and West Virginia worry. From the Herald Mail, Shepherdstown vigil held for WV student found dead in Australia. This, I did not know this girl, but apparently she's from Shepherdstown, my college town where I lived for 10 years. She was going to WVU, but then studying abroad in Australia, and the most I could see is that it could possibly be some kind of brain blood issue and not suspicious. Lawsuit says, given the finger to police, a First Amendment right. That's from WVRecord.com. A little bit of good news, unemployment down in the Mountain State, and sports news that I don't fully wrap my head around, but it's interesting. Anytime West Virginia can make it into the news with something that isn't horribly negative, Romo talks about his West Virginia cabin bachelor party. And you can get that from Click to Houston. But the way we end the news purge and the way we end the West Virginia worry is with an update on West Virginia miners trapped in life-threatening mining jobs.
And now an update on the ongoing situation in Bentonville, West Virginia. A group of miners, apparently the entire employee roster of the Kennebrook coal mine, are still trapped in dangerous, backbreaking mining jobs. Just under an hour ago, all 421 miners employed at Kennebrook were denied a pay raise. Now friends and family of those trapped in the jobs have already gathered around the mouth of the mine, hoping and praying that these miners somehow make it out before losing the best years of their lives to horrible, thankless work.
Hoping and praying and wishing that something else comes up, maybe a job at a gas station.
Let's go to Brian Scott now, live on the scene for more. Brian, what is the situation there?
Well, Brooke, the tension here is growing. These miners have been trapped in these hellish jobs for 2 to 37 years, and every additional year just increases the chances that they'll never get out before retirement.
Now, Brian, we did hear reports that some of the miners, two of the miners actually, were rescued this afternoon.
Yeah, there was one bit of good news when 18-year-old Terry Coolidge and 19-year-old Vic Hansard emerged from the mine after an overnight shift and announced that they'd be joining the Army.
Okay, that's very moving. But, Brian, are there rescue efforts underway to rescue the rest of the trapped miners?
Well, officials are hoping to send a robotic probe into the mine to find the remaining miners and allow rescuers to offer career advice over the radio. But if that's not possible, Brooke, things could get very bad.
Has the Kennebec Corporation issued any kind of apology so far to these families?
Yes, the company has apologized to all the victims for robbing them of what could have been healthy, productive careers above ground. And they say they'll continue to apologize periodically for as many decades as the miners will remain trapped.
All right. Thanks so much. Keep us updated, please.
Thanks, Brooke.
And again, we laugh to not cry. And yes, my friends, I am going there next week to my beloved home state, and much battered and beleaguered as it may be, of West, by God, Virginia. So, as I said at the top of the show, which has now been a little extra supersized, which is great because there's so much to cover and I hate to have to rush through all of it any more than I already do. So, no show next week. We will be R&R. And that brings to a conclusion this jam-packed episode 229 for August 19th, 2011. We see that the West Memphis 3 story still dominates the front of Google News. 20 minutes ago from KTHV, West Memphis 3 and Damian Eccles overwhelmed by release. West Memphis 3 freed after 18 years behind bars. We'll have to check, and you'll have to navigate Netflix and maybe see if the documentary or either of the documentaries about the West Memphis 3 are available to watch instantly, Paradise Lost. And again, my friends, I appreciate all your support. I appreciate all the news tips and, of course, the donations and just spreading the word about this show. I think this is unlike most other alternative news and media outlets that you'll find out there. And I'm speechless. Thanks so much. This has been episode 229, August 19th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. Reminding you, as always, my friends, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.